TV Campfire Podcast.
I was like, yep, okay, so you win for the week.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It's one of the best things on television.
Oh! All right, we got you a hold of the
level. No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
That was the best scene ever. Like, that blew me away.
It was absolutely amazing. I just couldn't believe it.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 618, and I am Libby, your host. And this week we have returning guests.
Malik, with Artistic Director of Griot Theater.
Hi, this is Allison, and I write reviews for 6 Degrees of Geek.
Hi, this is Tom. I chair Visual and Media Arts at Palm Beach Atlantic University and host the Screen Tom podcast on iTunes and Spotify.
Hi, this is Yusun. I'm a costume designer and TV enthusiast from Los Angeles.
All right, let's start off with the news. Tom, what do you got?
ABC has announced that Scott Foley is going to join Will Trent as a love interest for Angie. Hallelujah, praise the Lord. I am so tired of him falling into
Wait,
her
what show
bed.
Is this?
Will Trent.
Oh.
On Will Trent. Amazon, John Krasinski, Sexiest Man Alive, and Matthew Reese are going to star in a serial killer drama series, Silent River. The Expanse creators Daniel Abraham and Ty Frank have set an adaptation of their book series Captives War at Amazon, and they're launching a new media company called Expanding Universe with Naren Shankar and Breck Eisner, with whom they worked on The Expanse. The Legally Blonde prequel series has hired Carolyn Dries from Batwoman as co-showrunner with Laura Kittrell, who has developed the show about young Elle Woods. Apple TV Plus has announced that Hugo Weaving will be back for Slow Horses Season 5. Your Friends and Neighbors with Jon Hamm has been renewed for season 2 before season 1 premieres, and Severance will launch a podcast hosted by Ben Stiller and Adam Scott. And sadly, for those people who liked the movie Wolves with Brad Pitt and George Clooney, the follow-up Wolves 2 is not proceeding.
I take it somebody did not like that movie.
Yeah, well, it was amusing, but I wouldn't have paid to see that in the theater. Disney Plus has announced that Courtney B. Vance will will be the new Zeus on Percy Jackson, and said heavenly hugs to his brother. He and Lance Reddick were friends. HBO has announced that Richard Gadd and Jamie Bell will star in the HBO-BBC co-production drama series Half Man, 6 episodes, which Gadd created, and he also became an A-lister for creating and starring in Baby Reindeer. Fox has re-upped with Hulu for 4 more years, so we'll be able to watch things on Hulu instead of Fox the day after. MGM Plus has renewed the sci-fi horror series From for season 4. I've never heard of it, but mainly.
Oh my God! First of all, we all have to watch it because I totally want to cover it. It's amazing. I love it. I binged it in the last few weeks. It's so good.
Okay.
All right, continue.
Is that it? NBC has announced that Gabriel Macht will recur on Suits LA for at least 3 episodes.
Nice.
The Mothership show. And Happy's Place with Reba McEntire gets 5 more episodes, bringing its season order to 18. Next, Netflix has ordered a limited series, I Will Find You, based on Harlan Coben's thriller, and the showrunner will be Robert Hull. Thomas Hayden Church will join season 2 of the comedy series Tires from Shane Gillis. Never heard of it. Paramount Plus announced that Sly Stallone is nearing a deal for Tulsa King seasons 3 and 4. And Tom Hardy, Helen Mirren, and Pierce Brosnan have officially joined Guy Ritchie's new series, which was originally developed as a UK spinoff of Ray Donovan, but then has been reworked as a standalone series. At Peacock, Law and Order Organized Crime showrunner John Shiban is out. This is the 6th showrunner change in 5 seasons. Ouch.
Wow.
And that's it.
Before we go on, the only thing I want to talk about, the reason you've never heard of From is because it is on MGM Plus, which nobody has. It is from the creators, a couple of the creators from Lost, but the good ones, not necessarily the bad ones. And my elevator pitch for this show, really quick, is that it's starring Harold Perrineau from Lost. And it is slightly horror, but it's not really that scary. But the concept is there's this town, and if you happen to drive into that town, you can never leave. And people from all over the country have been like on road trips driving. And next thing they know, they're in their town. There's no rhyme or reason of how you get there. But the horror part of it is when the sun sets, these monsters come out and try to eat you or kill you or murder you or something, unless you're in a safe place. There's like, it's almost like tag. You have to be in a safe place. And Harold's character is the sheriff of the town trying to keep the community together and trying to keep the death toll as low as possible and also figure out how to leave the town. That is the premise. I love it. It is, and we'll talk about it later off podcast, but I wanted to pitch it since you brought it up, because I was like, why are we not, every time I watch the episode, I'm like, why are we not covering the show? Anyway, all right. Thank you for bringing it up very organically without me having to do that. Let's start off with the shows. First up, we're going to talk Dune and Dune Prophecy, and we're going to talk the first two episodes, starting with the first one. And to let you guys know where I stand, I have been a diehard Dune fan since I was a very wee child, and I have watched the David Lynch Dune somewhere around 20 times, maybe.
Whoa. What?
Maybe more. And I've read 90% of the books, because there's like all these books by his, there's Frank Herbert and then there's Brian Herbert who did its continuation. I've read a bunch of those. So to say I'm a Dune fan is putting it a little mildly. So that's, I want you to know that to see where I'm coming in on the show. And the open I really liked because it gives you like this flashback to the Butlerian Jihad, which is a 1,000 page each book. There's a trilogy, each book is 1,000 pages, and I've read it and it's amazing. And I love that they gave you this whole like just a little glimpse of the machine war, which made me very happy. So I overall was pretty much, unless they really screwed the pooch, I was already going to like this. Only thing I will say is that when they reveal the power of the blonde guy that I don't remember his name now.
Desmond Hart.
Thank you. When they reveal his power at the end, I was like, wait, what? 'Cause
the end of episode one or two?
It's the end of episode one. One. When the kid burns the kid. Yeah. I was like, nobody in Dune has that power. What are you guys doing?
Paul Atreides didn't have that power.
I know. So that's why I was like, whoa, what's happening here? So I that's the only thing that I'm cautious about. Other than that, I like the setup of the families and seeing, you know, where everybody's, I like seeing the origin of the Bene Gesserit sisterhood. I really like seeing the school and the and I'm very upset because I found out that the hour that they cut out of this pilot was all from the school. And I was like,
it did seem kind of truncated. Like, because they used like they edited it with like flashes,
montages
like,
and stuff,
montages and stuff, yeah. You know, and I thought, oh, that's kind of weird. Like, I would have liked it done more.
I wanted to see the training. I wanted to see them standing in the rain trying to do their, you know, all that stuff. Yeah. So a lot of that got cut, and that was by far my favorite part of the pilot. I thought the diplomacy stuff was okay. It was set up. And I was, so that's where I'm at. Other people please speak.
I'll start because I didn't know that there was a second episode we were supposed to watch. So I'll deal with first episode. You guys can do the second. I really liked it. I thought the production values were excellent. I thought the costume design was fantastic. I mean, outside of the Bene Gesserit sisters, because, you know, obviously they have similar kind of, you know, costumes. But the princess, her outfits were gorgeous. I love that face mask thing with the, you know, jeweled kind of chained, you know, thing. Her like corset was beautiful. You know, her dress was beautiful. I thought it was really, really detailed. So that was beautiful. I thought the score was excellent throughout. I noticed it. I mean, I know you're kind of, you know, you talk about like if it's really good, you probably shouldn't notice it, you know, it just kind of becomes a part of the show in a good way. But I there were moments where I thought, oh, this is actually beautiful. So I enjoyed the score very much. I think the acting across the board is very good. Little sad that my Korean representation, Jihei,
she got burned up pretty bad.
She got burned up with the kid. I thought she was excellent. I really liked her character very much, and not, you know, just because she was Korean. You know, she was the aide to the main guy, whatever. Yeah.
She was his truthsayer to the emperor.
Yeah, she was his truthsayer, and I thought she was a really interesting character. You know, with the nightmare, and then, you know, going back to the sisterhood to, you know, kind of warn them and all of that. So I kind of thought that she was going to be in the series longer. I would have enjoyed her because I thought she was a really interesting character, and I thought she did a great job. The kid was annoying.
But did he deserve to be burned alive? Like,
no,
yeah.
No. But so I'm not unhappy that he's gone. But that being said, I don't know what happened in the second episode. So you guys can, I'm debating whether or not I'm going to listen to you guys talking about it. Because I'm very interested. So I want the Cliff Notes version. So someone else.
I'll go next because I did not finish the second episode. I was a little disappointed. I'm not as big of a Dune fan as Libya is, but I do have many of the books. I read the trilogy when I was in college and just reread book one in a book club as the first of the movies by Denis Villeneuve came out. Here's my problem. I thought the first, the Butlerian Jihad flashback or that thing, that was fantastic. And then nothing happens except for exposition for like 40 some minutes. And then finally, when the little kids got the toy with the AI toy.
The little lizard, yeah.
I could have set my stopwatch by, okay. I mean, the problem with Dune as a whole is it's such a rich world. It's hard to do it without, I mean, movie one of the Villeneuve is basically mostly
set up. Yeah,
for part two, which is up, hopefully will be up for a bunch of Oscars this year. So I'll keep watching it, but I was just, it was almost like a textbook. It's the problem with the Sci-Fi Channel miniseries from back in the...
That was super low budget, though. That was hard to watch. I've watched it like five times, but it's still hard to
watch. I've watched it at least twice, but still, it's so expository and talky.
Yeah.
You got to find whatever action there is and bring it out early.
That's so, yeah.
I'd give the pilot, and especially knowing that there was a lot more to the pilot, because I saw the East Coast feed, and when it ended, I texted y'all and said, hey, it's down to like 60-some minutes. Because I was expecting it to be a longer pilot, and I don't know, you know, Zaslav strikes again. But I'll keep watching, but I was just kind of disappointed that they didn't find a way to get more action and make the table setting a little bit more interesting. And is Mark Strong going to be in everything playing morally?
Mark Strong is, I thought he was really great, but he's the emperor, and I don't think he's supposed to be morally reprehensible. He's just kind of a weak emperor.
Yeah.
I think that's really what
very
he is.
Very weak. Very weak. He seems to just sit around and wait for somebody else to make decisions for him.
Yes.
And that's an
like
odd
that in your life.
Thing is, Mark Strong is an odd choice for that kind of a character. He really is. He doesn't usually play weak characters, and so the fact that he's so indecisive about everything, and he basically just, you know, looks around for some woman next to him to tell him what to do, whether that's his wife or that's his
Bene
Gesserit, truthsayer. You know, it's got to be. He just sits around going, "What do I do?" So yeah, he is a very weak character, and he's a weird choice for that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, roll into episode two, so then Malik can talk about some of that too.
So I think the pooch was partially screwed.
Okay.
I'm also a fan of Dune. I've read maybe 60 or 70% of the books. I know the Litany Against Fear by heart, and that Mordeeb is a killing word. I was very much excited for this show. I'm still excited by the concept or the idea of the show. I love the subject matter. I don't think it's well executed, largely in terms of the dialogue. The most interesting television or film or anything is really when this is what I mean, but this is what I say. Subtext, right? And the dialogue here, everybody says exactly what they mean. And they tend to do the most direct,
Except
they
for the
tend to
benefit.
do the di most direct line between where they are and where they want to get to. So I found the dialogue really uninteresting, particularly as we'll probably talk about compared to some of the other shows that we're watching that have such wonderful dialogue. Here, I found it kind of lacking.
Only thing I, Malik, the
What?
only thing I would say in contrast to that is the Bene Gesserits, where they are saying one thing and then signing the exact opposite thing. So that's the, but other than that, I would not necessarily disagree with you. But I did want to point out the Bene Gesserit Sisterhood is absolutely doing what you're saying.
That's it. Well, that construct could be interesting, but even that I don't think is executed well because their signing is so out in the open. Do people like what are they doing with their fingers? Like, I mean, who doesn't know at this point that they're speaking to each other underneath all of that? So
No one in
the idea
television
of
has peripheral vision. That's basically
because the
you can
way
get
they're
away with
playing,
so much that way.
they are playing it like nobody is noticing them do this. Like that's the way they're playing the show.
Yeah,
I'm
that
just
doesn't make a
saying.
lot of sense. I'm going to say something that I generally don't say about television or actors, but it's just so striking. The character of Lila,
Who's Lila?
she's one of the students. She's the one who, the student who goes into the dream,
Oh, right.
and she has such an interesting face. Like I would put her in stuff. Her face is just so interesting looking. But also the storyline with her, I'm probably skipping because this is near the end
Oh,
of
it's
the
episode
second
two.
episode.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, just the idea that they are going to send her to talk to her ancestors, which is kind of interesting. It's a cool
I like it.
concept.
Yeah.
But then they don't remember what they did to her ancestor. And
No, they lied to her. So,
you're not explaining something I don't know. What I'm
okay.
saying is, they know that she's going to speak to her ancestors. They know it's possible for her to speak to the ancestor that they murdered, and they
Right.
sent her anyway. And as a
Right.
matter of fact, other than the fact that the murdered ancestor murders her, she would have come back knowing that they killed her. And
Right.
they'd seem
But
to
they,
have no.
no, they talk about it. The two sisters, they say she's gonna find out what we did. And she's like, well, the information she's gonna bring back is worth it. So they do talk about it for like one sentence, the concept that she's gonna find out that they absolutely murdered her grandmother. So,
So
oops.
if they did all of that to keep it secret, that just feels like a really not very well executed plot point.
Well, I
Um,
mean, who
so,
is she
so
gonna tell? Like, I guess they figured who's she gonna tell that would believe her over, I don't know. But
so
continue,
it's point
continue.
and counterpoint,
Yeah,
huh?
I don't know. Go ahead, go ahead.
No, you're good. So yeah. I thought the pooch was partially screwed on this one, but
So, question, are you gonna keep watching or are you done?
if you'll let me comment, I'll keep watching.
Okay. Allison, were you done about episode two?
No, I well, my view of this, and I read the trilogy, and I kind of gave up at God Emperor because it's
As
just
you
not for me.
should. God Emperor is not good. Yes.
Yeah.
Not
Um,
awful.
so yeah, so that was sort of it for me. I've seen the trilogy, and that's it. But yeah, I'm tending more toward Tom and Malik's view of this. I thought it was visually beautiful. It's shot gorgeously. It looks like a movie. The sets are gorgeous. I thought the costumes actually were more capable than brilliant, to be honest. Overall, you know, I thought it was good. The quality of the acting is generally good overall. But again, the dialogue is not scintillating. It is not. It doesn't go that extra step from being just, you know, useful. You know, it conveys what's going on. It pushes forward the plot. To wow, that's really smart. That's witty. That's brilliant. Ooh, that turn of phrase. I'm gonna remember that quote. There's nothing like that. And there's nothing. And that indicates the characters. Wit, their character, the character's intelligence, and these are supposed to be highly intelligent characters, and yet they don't really speak that way. They don't convey that, you know, with that extra touch. And I think that's a failure in the writing. Most of the characters, except for the very lead characters that we're watching, the sisters, and the main royal family, tend to be very sketchy. Travis Fimmel's character, I mean, he's basically been brought in to play a standard Travis Fimmel character. That's what he does in every show.
Yeah.
And as you pointed out, his power is weird. I mean, when they started doing that, all I could think of was even Paul, who was supposed to be the end product of 10,000 years of breeding, couldn't do anything like that. So where does that come from? How does that happen?
And Even I could maybe buy him killing the kid directly in front of him, but how?
But
did
a
he
planet
kill,
away.
He how did he kill the sister
in another
planet?
Solar system?
I think
system?
We need to give them a chance to explain that. I mean, that to
yes,
me was a
mystery. I agree.
I would I, like I to, but you know, they showed the video, the three-dimensional video of him with the sandworm. Mm-hmm. And at first, I thought, oh well, maybe he's like actually a Fremen, and he's pretending to be this guy, and you know, and so there's like something having to do with that, but no, he's actually just some guy who was who was part of the military.
No, he got swallowed. The whole thing is
he got swallowed by a worm,
and then it let him go and gave him this power.
That's what I was thinking.
Which, you know, I mean, again, they have to explain that because
yes,
that's
feel
something
like
that's
might.
Never happened, yeah. You know, that's and I'm willing to wait a certain amount of time for them to do it, but
it's
when
only
they
six
introduce
episodes
yeah
only six
I mean
episodes,
well
so you have to wait
and hopefully they'll get to it by the end of this, and instead of having us wait until season two to find out, you know, maybe possibly
I don't yeah I feel like they're gonna have to do that. I agree with you. I think
want to say too, when they showed that bit from the Butlerian Jihad, which they just call the machine war. I noticed Jihad is not a word that they use in this at all. But that looked a whole lot more exciting than what we're actually watching.
I
would love to have seen something like that, because the rest of this is just, you know, politics back and forth. So far it's not that interesting politics.
I would say they needed to lean into the origin of the sisterhood, which is interesting. That is interesting. Instead of us doing the politics, because everybody's talking about the acting and everything. And the one weak link that I found was actually the princess and her half brother. I don't find them to be the best of actors. I think that they're the weak link of if we're going to, other than, what is his name? Himmel? What is that dude's name?
Travis Fimmel.
Travis. But yeah, he was okay. He was good in Vikings, but here,
oh, I liked him in Vikings. But then I hadn't seen him do the same thing over and over by then.
Right here, he very much feels like, oh, you want me to do that thing that I do? Okay, cool.
That's it.
Yeah, and it's just not that interesting. But
And I will say also, I just want the I think it's kind of a failure of imagination to have already 10,000 years before the events in Dune, we've already established that the Harkonnens are bad and the Atreides are heroes. And that apparently never changes over 10,000 years.
I was upset about the fact that the shields never change. Like the shield thing. Yeah. I was like, that's the same we just saw. 10,000 years, really? No development? But go ahead.
I mean, that's the history of human civilization, period. And a few things have changed since the beginning. So, I mean, it really just, it rings false somehow.
I would agree with you. Even, I mean, the things you said, plus kind of the status of the emperor, and they're somewhat weak hold unless whoever controls the spice, you know, the fact that the emperor could be threatened by the other houses. It what would be far more interesting if things were not opposite, but very different from the story that we know. And this is helping us understand how we get from here to the story that we know. Right. But right now, it actually just reinforces everything. I mean, even when, you know, they had her develop the voice on her own. Mm-hmm. And then we don't know that anybody else has the voice. Like, at least over two episodes, we've only seen one person use the voice, and that was Secret. But, yeah, what you said, Allison.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on. Let's move on. I think we're going to still keep covering it to varying degrees of appreciation, but I do agree with almost everybody's, you know, valid concerns about the story. I think they are valid. I just, like I said, I just like doing, so I'm gonna keep watching. So anyway, let's move on to the next thing. Next up, we're gonna talk Superman, and that's three episodes. Some kind of way, it's three episodes. How'd that happen? But Tom, you want to lead us off, because we only have the penultimate left.
The I mean, for me, episode 8, An Average Man. I can't remember what happened in episode 7.
That's the one where he reveals, like, everybody finds out he's Superman.
Episode 8 is when he reveals his identity to everybody.
Yeah, I think it's 8 and 9 then that we're doing. So yeah, so that's the episode where he spends half the episode trying to gaslight everybody in town and pretend that he's not Superman. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't resemble Superman at all. Your son must be crazy. Like, he's doing that for the first 20, 30 minutes. And then he's like, I feel bad about calling everybody liars. Is that really worth it? And then he just, well, also, he doesn't have a choice. He basically, Luther puts him up against a wall where he literally aims a criminal at him to prove that he's Superman.
Yeah. In the diner. Yeah. Yeah. So
he doesn't. I would like to say it was altruism where he decided to stop gaslighting teenagers, but it's actually he didn't have it. The secret had gotten so out of control and so unwieldy that there was no way for him to keep it anymore. So, but I did like that moment where the whole town reacts to finding out that, and, you know, and then he does the interview on the news and talks to everybody about it. I thought all those moments were really good, sweet. I almost felt like that should have been the end of the show. You know what I mean? Like, that feeling I felt at the end of episode 8, I really liked it. It felt almost like full circle and kind of complete. And then I was like, now we got to deal with Luther, who, after he just decided that he's just going to punch his way into defeating Superman, did not win any points for me.
So when his female assistant, I can't remember what this one's name is, because usually it's Mercy, but they decided to go a different direction. But when she says, "You're wearing the wrong suit," I'm like, she's totally gonna get a power suit, and the easiest way to do is to steal John Henry Irons.
Yeah, and so he doesn't even build the suit. He has nothing. They basically get the beginning of Brainiac to come in and build a suit for him, because that's the Milton guy. And I was really? So we're just going with Lex is just not smart at all?
I think he's smart. I think he's just in a time crunch. We only have two episodes left before the end of the series. I gotta say, I have a hunch where they're gonna go in the series finale, because it seems like we've shifted from the death of Superman story arc to All-Star Superman story arc. And
I don't know that story arc. I don't know that one.
It was the animated movie was written by Dwayne McDuffie, and he literally passed like days after the world premiere at the Paley Center in LA. So the next DC animated movie had a tribute to Dwayne. Dwayne was amazing. The episode bringing in Tom Cavanagh to play instead of a variant of the characters he's played before, he's playing Glorious Godfrey from Jack Kirby's Fourth Wall World, and they brought back why am I blanking on his name? Chad Coleman, who was Bruno Mannheim last season.
That was good to bring him back. I thought that worked.
He's an actor with a lot of gravitas, so it's interesting because he basically said, "We told you." Yes, I framed him, but if you let him out, bad stuff is going to happen. And surprise, but
Yeah.
no, you had to be so too goody two shoes. But yeah, the
And I have to say, ch turning the what is his name? Doomsday, bringing. I felt like the Doomsday story was kind of done. Like we were done with him, and so then them bringing him back at the end just
I
felt
think they wanted to
anticlimactic.
show off that they could have a comics accurate version of Doomsday, because that's
Yeah,
basically.
but I know I get that, but I don't care. Like I don't. If it's
Yeah.
gonna, it's gonna. We only have one episode to the end of the entire series, and bringing Doomsday back felt redundant.
Are redundant?
Yeah, we felt
Yeah.
redundant
Yeah.
because we had dealt with him. Doomsday was gone. They had come up with a way to smoothly get him exit stage right, and now they bring him back just to make it comic book act. Like that's not a reason to adjust your story. And now you got to deal with Doomsday again, and I don't feel like we only have one episode left, and I don't want to deal with Doomsday
I
again.
have a hunch that the grand finale, that Doomsday will not play into it as big as people might think.
Okay,
That's all.
sure.
I mean, and
All right.
I don't have special knowledge, but I think that they're going to go more with the All-Star Superman in series finale versus what you might think. So.
Okay. I don't know what that is, so that's actually good for me. So I'll be surprised. All right, let's move on. Next up, we're going to talk shrinking, and we're going to talk episodes 7 and 8. And seven, all I remember at the end of seven is that they get found out at the end by the dad sees them in the restaurant. What happened at the beginning of the episode, though? I don't remember what
Isn't
happened in that episode.
the beginning or earlier in the episode where the was it the previous episode where the daughter forgives? Did we talk about
We
that last
talked about the forgiveness already.
time? We
We
did talk
discussed
about
that.
that last podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you
Yeah.
guys all thought it was missing a beat.
Yep, we talked about it. I don't remember what happened in that episode. Other than,
We
okay,
bishop
so it
was in
was
that episode.
mostly. Oh, this was the episode where Jimmy was saying, I'm having a good run. And so he kept that guy with him, one of his
Oh,
patients with
right.
him.
He jimmied him.
That's right.
He like
He jimmied him.
basically kidnaps the
He
dude for the
jimmied
whole.
him.
Yes, he kidnaps the guy for the whole episode and makes him go to all his like picking up his daughter, going to PTA meetings. Like it was insane. And that dude was like, I'm here against my will.
And then they had group and then they had group therapy naked in the ocean.
Oh, right. Yes. Malik, you have thoughts, comments about that episode?
I think it's one of the best written episodes of the series, and I already like the series.
Episode 7.
Yes. I found myself laughing throughout the whole thing, watching it by myself, which is always a, for me, a sign. So I really enjoyed it.
Anything in particular stands out?
So I mean, you folks have mentioned, I think. So the way that they did the cliffhanger at the end was probably the strongest piece of the episode. Kind of like you, I watched it almost 2 weeks ago, so some of it blurs for me a little bit. But I do, well, that's going into the next episode. So
No, that's fine. Go ahead. Go ahead.
my commentary is after, so the setup at the end of the episode where they are hanging out laughing and he walks and sees them through the window, is beautiful. I think the aftermath of it in the following episode didn't capitalize on that moment as much as it could have. Also,
I disagree.
disagree. Okay. Well, something I'm trying to remember. I don't know if this was just because of how I watched it in my memory, or did Brian tell the same story in each episode about how he ended up talking to the hit and run driver? I feel like he told. Go ahead.
He elaborated and he elaborated different things to try to make him. He embellished. Yes, he tried to make himself look better to Jimmy, and that it was basically the same story. The bare bones was the same story, but he embellished it when he talked to Jimmy so that Jimmy wouldn't be mad at him.
Yeah.
How do we know he embellished it?
Because we saw it. Because
we've seen it and we've heard him tell different aspects of the story.
Yes.
I mean, so I kind of liked it. I mean, he even after he finished, he called it a one-man show, which it was. I thought it was well done, well-written, well-performed. But I was didn't he tell this exact same story in the prior episode? So I think that was done intentionally, but it was kind of interesting. So I liked that part of it. I think that Jimmy's reaction to what he witnessed wasn't as rich as I would have liked in the, I guess.
He played it down. Like, I thought he was going to be angrier.
Yes. Yeah. And he was like, you know, you're my daughter, so I love you. You're not my daughter, so get out. And that was kind of it. I did, however, like when he went to see Drunk Driver, I guess, what is Drunk Driver's name? I'll just call him Drunk Driver. So
Roy Kent.
I did like when he went to see Drunk Driver and, you know, he said his intention was kind of positive, but he was basically like, I don't want you talking to me, breathing in my direction, looking at my daughter. I don't want you anywhere around this place.
Totally understandable.
And then when he went home and told her, oh, I forgave him. And it's like, no, that ain't exactly what you did. I did like that moment, but the immediate fallout, I don't think we capitalized as much as we could have based on how they set it up.
Yeah, go ahead.
I disagree. I didn't need him to be angry. I feel like when people sometimes are so angry, they don't have words, you know, and they don't necessarily blow up. Like if it were me, and it was my best friend, I think I would have just been like, you need to leave because I can't say all the stuff I want to say to you.
I didn't say anger. I said they didn't capitalize on that moment. And so there wasn't a cost for the people who were kind of got caught, which is the daughter and Brian. There wasn't really a cost for what we witnessed.
But like I said, for me, it rang true. Like for me, I didn't need to see the cost because for me, I feel like there was, for the comedic effect, remember, the show has to balance, you know, the comedy and the pathos and the, you know, tragedy. So, and for me, it was a funny scene, you know what I mean? Like, it was a, you know, I love you, you just get out, you know? And like, it, you know, to me, it was very balanced, you know, and it was more comedy than, because, you know, he had just done his one-man show. And then, like I said, for me, it seemed like it was organic because if I'm that angry at someone, I don't know. Sometimes I don't explode. I'm not an exploder anyway. So
I would say only thing about that is if that were true, I would have liked to have seen it on his face. The actor didn't play it that way. So anyway,
I mean, you know, that.
But anyway, Tom's trying to talk. Go ahead, Tom.
I want to tag in something we left out of Seven. Seven is where Liz has her little dalliance with this friend that her husband does not like at all.
That's huge.
And then she has to confess to him that what happened, and he takes off. And so that allows episode 8 to have an A plot and a B plot both dealing with forgiveness. And before I get into that, can I just say how much I love Jessica Williams with Damon Wayans Jr.?
Oh yes.
I mean, he's got his own CBS show with his dad, which I suffered through a couple episodes. They're funny, the show is not, but he and Jessica Williams, that's a hot black couple I can root for.
They've got great chemistry.
But I thought it was interesting that you've got these two plot lines in episode 208 dealing with forgiveness and people struggling to forgive, which I appreciate the struggle. I thought that Derek One's struggle, I thought that was a little bit more embodied and fleshed out.
It felt real. Yeah.
Jason so Peter. Real.
Because the fact that he went to confront the guy and the guy knew what he had done and knew that he could have gotten a butt whooping, But, you know, aside from the fact that the guy told him, she chooses you, dude. But that still doesn't make him feel better that he decides to finish the beer because it was a damn good.
The thing is, I was watching this with my mom, and she predicted that Derek was gonna punch the dude out and all this other stuff. And I was like, nope, not
It's not
Derek.
in his personality. It's
I
not in
said,
his
Derek is not,
personality.
I know. I said, Derek's not gonna punch him. I said, Derek's gonna go over there thinking he's gonna punch him, but he's not gonna punch him.
And I liked
And
his conversation with Liz too, because about how he has always been there for her. He has indulged pretty much her every whim. And the one time he asks her not to do something, she blows him off. And I mean, he was hurt. I mean, that's the part of yeah. And the thing is, it wasn't just the kiss. It's the fact that this is something that was that I did not want you to do, and you did it anyway because you're selfish. I mean,
Yeah,
and
but
she knows she is. And Derek has been shown to be pretty selfless. I mean, the fact that the most selfish thing he did was, I worked so you can afford all this. Now it's my turn. So I'm going to do my thing. You need to get out of the house if you want.
well, it's also just as an actor, you know, for the whole, you know, that we're in season two right now, he's not had a serious moment the entire show. He's been essentially the butt of the joke all of the time. And so for him to have the opportunity to have that turn, and he executed it
Nailed it
so well.
beautifully, beautifully.
And I just want to say a moment for Ted McGinley. People always say he's a serial show killer. No, he's like Hamburger Helper for an aging show that needs a couple more years for a syndication deal.
He's
He
the
replaced Ron
MVP.
Howard on Happy Days. He replaced Fred Grandy on Love Boat. He replaced the original neighbor dude on Married with Children. I mean, the dude has made a lot of shows go a lot longer than they deserve to, and he's a good actor.
I
He
didn't
never,
know he was a good actor. I did not know he was a good actor. I really thought that he was just comic relief, you know, fodder. Not just in this show, but in anything I've ever seen him in. I think he's the MVP. I think that for me, this episode 100% cemented for me, and we'll talk about it next week. Best show of the year. Best show of the year. I 100% loved. I mean, even the title, The Last Drink. We didn't talk about the C plot, which is Harrison Ford, and it's a small
Oh,
plot,
right.
you know. But we go through flashbacks, we see how he didn't tell Jessica Williams' character about him having Parkinson's, about him finally being really vulnerable, and needing to bring Sean with him to his appointment, which was amazing. Even that was fantastic. He's like, "You're not allowed to flirt with my neurologist." And you know, and the and the and Sean is all like, "Oh, you seem like a Navy SEAL to me," you know. And I mean, you know, and then he was like, "Oh, this is gonna be interesting." Like, you know, with the two of them, you know, getting into it, neurologist and Harrison Ford. And so Sean was great in that scene. Harrison Ford was great in that scene. So you know, the C plot was excellent. I thought the again, this to me, this scene is the epitome of the comedy drama when Jessica Williams has the therapy session, Ted McGinley, and she does the "you want the friend or the psychiatrist," you know, or the psychologist, you know, and then she spins her chair, you know, and she's like friend mode, you know, and I thought, and then we get the Ted McGinley, so we get the last, you know, and then we get that, you know, and it's not just about forgiveness. He has this really organic realization, like about how, you know, even he says, like, "Wait a minute, I'm the one that's been wronged, and why am I the one that's feeling bad about this?" You know, and he realizes in that moment that he wasn't there for his wife, you know, in this really important period, you know, and then we carry that through where, you know, when he says to his wife, and she's like, "I can't, you know, you're only going to make me feel worse by apologizing," and he's like, "Job done then," you know what I mean?
That
He's like,
was
"You're
great.
that
Yeah,
was
but
great."
we,
I mean,
yeah.
so everything about that episode, and I cried again, which I was leaking water. I didn't cry. I was just leaking water, and like I 100% think that the show is just brilliant, and the dialogue. And I know you want to wrap it up, so I will wrap it up by saying I will wrap it up by how the show wrapped up that episode. and gave its title about the last drink. You know, giving that to Harrison Ford. Harrison Ford's acting in that was the episode was also phenomenal with Ted McGinley, where he went from comedy curmudgeon to really, you know, sympathetic, empathetic, you know, with Jason Siegel's character, and where he just basically, you know, at the very end, he says, you know, I hope so. I really hope so. You know, about, you know, him being able to forgive himself, Jason Siegel, because, you know, he couldn't forgive himself for being such a horrible father during, you know, his suffering, his grief, you know, his grieving. And I was really waiting to see what Harrison Ford was, his reaction, and him just saying, I really hope so. You know, that just broke my heart. It just was so real and so beautiful. And, you know, him giving him that moment.
Houston, I'm going to cut you off. You're done.
I know. About you're him done. Saying, I'm going to take my you're last done. Drink. You, it was just beautiful. The whole
okay,
episode
thank
was
you.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Next up, I think we're all saying thumbs up for Shrinking. Yes. We loved it. Unfortunately, next up, we're going to talk about What We Do in the Shadows, which was not great. And I think Tom said that the guy who plays Sean must have blackmail.
Does he have naked pictures of one of the producers? Because
something. I don't know, man. Any episodes with Sean A suck. They really, really do. And the first one was all about him, and he was in
his
the hospital.
Attack.
Oh,
his
yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like, and then they were like,
two
they were trying
attack.
To decide whether
two
to kill
attack.
Him. Yeah, they were like, should we kill him or what should we do? And I was just like, yes, please kill him, was my reaction to that. And oh, God, that episode was so boring. Unless anybody else has any thoughts.
Wait, I want to say one thing and then someone else can talk. The scene where he was jogging, you know, on the treadmill, but he was just like floating. They had a quick shot of him floating. I was totally like, that is how I would like to go on a treadmill. I was like, that is the only way I'll go on a treadmill is I could float over it. That was funny.
Allison, your thoughts real quick.
Well, you know, I mean, it started out, and as soon as they started talking about, oh, he's possessed and everything, and you see him yelling and screaming, I'm going, he's looking at a game on TV. You know, and then
it's not
it was,
funny. Yeah.
It's like, I mean, the joke was good for about 5 minutes of sketch, and they dragged it out to, you know, an entire episode, and there just wasn't enough there mm-mm. for that. I mean, there were moments that were funny. There were moments I liked, but overall, it's and we've said it before that I don't know where they're going with this. You know, they've mm-hmm. they've got a show and they're supposed to be wrapping it up, so you'd think it's going in a particular direction. I can't figure out what it is. It's
okay. Next you know. Episode, there's not enough talk about for that one. The next it's one at least has Guillermo. It has Guillermo in it. Yay! And he apparently is a fanboy of, what is it, Pooney? Police? And something, Inspector? Something, New York?
Some Law and Order-like thing, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or CSI.
Or CSI, yeah, yeah. Or whatever, yeah. But now that actually I thought was kind of funny. I mean, because they're making fun of, you know, television, and it was amusing,
it was
especially when you know, they go over and they're planning to have this whole battle against them and get them out of their neighborhood, and Laszlo and Nandor are just, you know, oh yeah, we're gonna do this, we're gonna go to that, I'm gonna go and kill him now, and he comes back and he's dressed as an AD and
a PA.
Yeah. You know, and he's more and more taking this role seriously, which
was
hysterical. I mean, that whole bit, you know, and you, I want that t-shirt. Where did you get that sweater?
To be fair, I've been on productions where I've had the same, like, I was like, I must have a crew shirt, even though I've only been on this for whatever.
What did
I need a crew
what
shirt.
Did he call that? That sweat something? The
swag.
Sweat.
It's swag.
No.
He called it like a sweaty or something.
Something. Oh. It was funny. Whatever he called it, it was funny.
All right. Yeah. All of that was pretty funny, and doing distractions so he can get into wardrobe to get the swag. By the way, wardrobe does not actually have that. Just FYI, if you break into a set, that's not where they keep the swag for that. It's not in wardrobe.
That too.
Mainly because I know this because I've tried to get it before. And it's not there. But I did appreciate them attempting to do it and then them having their battle over it. But I really like Guillermo being a fanboy. And he's like, do they read my fanzines? And I was like, oh, that's so adorable. That's so cute. Except some of it was disturbing, the pictures he drew, but we'll leave that alone. But I did like at the end, he finally gets to meet the actor that he's been idolizing. He's got a webpage for it. He's got all this stuff. And the guy's like this total jerk. And it's like, yeah, no, I don't want to take a picture with you. I don't feel like it. I don't. And then did they murder him? Did they kill the actor?
No, they didn't. They beat him up pretty bad.
It was a waste of Kevin Pollak to have him actually guest on the show.
Yeah, because he had like three lines.
Yeah, I just thought, for me, it was okay. I mean, it was better than the preceding episode, but it wasn't. It's such low hanging fruit.
Yeah, and it wasn't as good as the show has been. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, this is not the way to go out after 6 seasons.
It's limping out.
Was it T.S. Eliot who wrote, this is the way the world ends, with a whimper, not with a bang?
Yeah.
This is the way the show ends.
And their B story with Colin Robinson going to his friend's house and the wife has a thing for him.
Plotline.
It was very weird. And I think the last episode we did this, that I don't know what's going on with Colin Robinson. It's like they've forgotten what his character is supposed to be about. Because it was like weird. It's like, why is he reacting like this? This is not the way he's been depicted in any other season.
Yeah,
he would have drained them.
Exactly. He would have tried to, like, once they revealed what their actual plot was, he'd have been like, oh, great, sure, let's do that.
No, but they do get all the throwaway line about how he said, I would have drained him normally, but he's like my only friend or something. They do try.
Yeah, I know they say that, but I feel like once the weirdness came and he was like, they're not normal anymore. Like, the whole reason he liked them because they were his normal friends to hang out with.
Right.
And once they broke that rule and were not, then why not drain them?
Exactly. I mean, he should have just been boring them to death at that point, because that's all he's really interested in. So it's like, for some reason, Colin Robinson has been replaced with this, you know, Colin Robinson lookalike, and the writers have forgotten how to write for him. It's very, very
unless weird. There's a big reveal at the end, and that it's not Colin Robinson.
It's not Colin Robinson after
all. Let's move on. We have nothing good to say about this, so let's keep rolling.
And that's a shame, because I've always loved this show, and it's sad that it's going out on such a bad note.
Well, when I do my rewatch, I'll stop at season 5. Because I think I've watched this show several times already. But anyway, let's move on. Next up, we're going to talk The Diplomat, and we're going to wrap that series up, episodes 4 through 6, since it's in a nice 3-package deal. And The Diplomat has, we talk about dialogue, they nail the dialogue. I believe everybody in this show is very intelligent. And where we left off last time was, oh god, what's the second in command guy's name, the one who got blown up?
Stewart.
Stewart is the actor.
So Stewart, what I really liked about this episode is it's after the fireworks and after all of that stuff, and he comes into the office feeling all good because he slept with some woman, he's feeling top of the world, finding out that his ex literally did a honeypot against him to see if he'd fall for it, and to find out where he felt about the whole hierarchy. And I was like, oh my god. Like, that was, you should not date a spy, because then when they're your ex, they'll do a honeypot. Like, it was crazy. And I liked how, I felt he was appropriately offended by that. And I was like, he was like, and she was ashamed of herself. She was like, yeah, I didn't use resources well. Yeah, sorry about that. But it did show him that he's not in top form, that he still has PTSD, that he is not behaving the way, because I was like, what is going on with him? And it was like his wake-up call where he realized, oh, I'm not behaving normally. Okay, cool. And so I like that storyline just for him to get back to a character that I like. And even though, yeah, and he apologizes. He's still not in the loop until, like, even towards the end of the season, they have not fully looped him 100% back in because of, you know, his behavior, which is kind of crazy.
It's also realistic. No, but I think that's realistic.
It is because he just got it. Like, I get it. He just got injured and stuff, but, and he's not behaving right yet. And they got to give him some time to do that. But I'm glad that his character is at least back to where I like him and back to where when he gives you advice, you can believe that it's good advice, you know? Like, towards the end, I can't remember. He said something to the ambassador that I'm blanking on right now, but he said something to her, and I was like, oh, you should maybe listen to him, you know? So that's the version of Stuart that I like, is my point. Anybody else, thoughts, comments?
Oh, my God, we spent so much time on that, and we didn't talk about the actual political drama.
Main thing was the sting operation against Trowbridge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And,
well, oh, no, but
I wanted you guys to talk about that. Go ahead.
Well, the cliffhanger of whatever the woman's character is, that
Roiland,
she falls off the Roiland, where she falls back on the chair and she's bleeding, and I thought that she was going to be dead, and then it was going to be, you know, a cover up. You know,
are you skipping to 206?
No,
that's not 206. That's 5.
Yeah, 5, yeah. 6, and wait.
Yeah, we're doing all 3 episodes. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go
ahead. You know, and I thought the cliche was going to be she's going to be dead, and then they're going to pivot to, you know, a cover up.
The prime minister killed somebody.
Yes, yeah. You know, and I thought, oh, I've seen this. You know what I mean? Like, you know, they accidentally kill somebody up, a hooker at a party. You know what I mean? And then the rest of the episode is about the cover up. But, you know, thankfully she lives, you know, and then everything else kind of continues. The storyline doesn't pivot. Which is fantastic. And I thought, you know, I wish I saw it so long ago because I binged. I didn't want to binge. So, you know, somebody else can talk about everything else, I guess. But this show is fantastic. It's compelling. There's no fat on the show. Every scene matters. Every word matters. And I will just talk about the scene between the husband and wife. You know, like every scene between the two of them, it rings so true. The dialogue rings so true with a couple that's been married for a long time.
Which conversation about the pie? No, that was in the last one.
No, there was a scene, it was so good, and I cannot remember the details of it. I mean, it all blurs to me because every conversation they have is so amazing, you know?
They are so toxic, though. I don't want them together. I want them to get a divorce, for the love of God, please.
No, but the love-hate that exists in a relationship that, you know, that is...
They should not be married. They should not be married.
No, but then, like, they need each other, both, like, outside of the marriage.
In a toxic way.
Yeah, no, but I, you know, but
politically though, no. I mean, they do help each other politically, yes. On an emotional level. Yeah, it's terrible.
But even in a political way, he's always making selfish decisions. He's not necessarily making decisions that help her.
No,
even
he politically, he has helped her.
He has.
You don't know which way he's gonna go. I don't trust.
Which makes
trust
the show
him. Fantastic.
That's it's, right.
For drama, yes. For a marriage? No. But
they're not, this is the thing, they're characters in a show. They're not like, you know, friends of mine who I go out to coffee with.
Right.
And so I am looking at them for different reasons.
Exactly.
I want them to stay together until, you know, they die of old age. I think they're great. If they were people who I personally was invested in, that would be different. But as characters, they're fascinating. It's like, you know, the characters in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf are absolutely poisonous. But without them, you don't have a play. You know,
yes.
I mean.
Yes.
And ultimately, violent. The advice, we're skipping forward a little bit. I want to go back, but just to continue on this thread. Ultimately, the advice that he's giving her is good advice. He's right politically. Like you said, emotionally, there's other stuff going on. But ultimately, even when he's lying to her, he's helping her. So I agree it's toxic. I also agree it's great for drama. And he is helping her. Now, how much of that is about his own self-interest or not, you can have a whole conversation about that. But each time he either lies to her, or better yet, when he wrestles with her on the bed and tackles her so she can't make that phone call, like he's being physical with her, and yet it was actually the right thing. Now, I'd have preferred as a human being that he just be able to tell her, put down the phone, and she puts down the phone. But language wasn't working, so he tackles her and pins her to the bed to stop her from making a harmful phone call. So it's both toxic. It's and helpful.
He beat the crap. She beat the crap out of him.
Yeah. He deserved that, though. But anyway, go ahead, Tom.
I gotta say the three best moments of season three for me are at the end of episode 205, and then the last two are in 206. I'm gonna go for it. At the end of 205, where we find out that Roiland's partner, her silent partner, was the vice president, which is why he tackles her in the bed.
Yeah.
And then when Kate confronts the VP and Allison Janney proves why she has so far tied Cloris Leachman's record and will probably beat it with this show, when she gives her the lecture about global politics. And
that was so great.
That was brilliant.
That was so great. Freaking okay. Brilliant.
When she came in carrying that map behind her,
the map, the best. Goes to the fireplace, gets a piece of charcoal, and draws on the map. And then the moment that got my, it's like, this is the end of the season? What? Where the husband calls Kate again and says,
well, that's the next
the president.
Episode. Wait, are we going to
no,
the
no, we're
end?
Going. No, yeah, we're going.
We're yeah,
going.
We're going.
Right, go ahead.
Where I talked to the president. He did not take it well. And I'm like, oh, I know where this is going.
And then you don't know it. Where it's going.
Yeah, you have no idea where
it's going. It's like, Kate, the president is dead. Which means Allison Janney's now the president.
President.
It's like,
and all of those men running out of the building. I thought they were coming to arrest her.
No. That's what I at first. I did too at first. No. But then I was like, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of people to arrest somebody.
That was like the first thing that I thought of. But then when I realized, you know, how it's like all Secret Service, I went, oh, no, 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 no.
That's great.
There is a lot of uncomfortable moments to come.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Malik.
I just want to put a cool hand.
I just want to point out, just going back a little bit, just moments about, I think, why this show is so well written and performed. Going back to when Kate Wyler, the ambassador, has her conversation with the First Minister of Scotland, and she mentions how her water word was similar to screaming fire in a theater.
Oh,
and
they
have their whole conversation, and then the First Minister was like, say the word fire. And she's like, it's one syllable. Like, just that's what I talk about, not having a straight line from where you are to where you want to get to. She set her up at the beginning of the conversation, had a whole conversation, and then came back to the fact that you Americans don't even know how to speak English. And by the way, you're in my country, not your country. I thought that was great use of both dialogue and characterization. Last thing I want to say is just also about the use of status. So Trowbridge, Prime Minister, is the highest status person in the entire show for the whole season until the Vice President shows up. And it is so amazing to me to see him in the meeting with the Vice President and all of a sudden he takes a step down. Now he's the same character, but it's like, oh, there's a bigger dog on the block. And just watching how the status affects how people relate to and talk to each other, I just think is impeccable. So I all the way around, kudos on both the writing and the performances in the show. I was going to talk about, Tom, when you talked about, and actually everybody talked about Vice President bringing in that map and the charcoal. To me, one, it's similar to how we talked about earlier in the season where they're writing on a whiteboard. It's like they're not, a lot of shows want to put technology into things and want to have people texting and slides And they're using really basic stuff to be like, I'm about to teach you a lesson and take you to school. Mm-hmm. And she was like, this is a part you're doing, you know, stay in your lane, because I'm looking at the whole board. I thought was great. So yeah, just beautiful.
Yeah, that was really good. I watched this also with my mom, if you noticed the theme. But she's like, oh my God, she's gonna deny it. She's gonna kill her. She's gonna do this. I was like, nope, she's going to explain herself, which is what she did. And she pulled that. I was like, I just didn't know at what level she was going to explain herself. But I knew that it was all gonna be like, once she got found out and called out, it wasn't gonna be, I didn't do it. Like Trowbridge would have been like, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. Like we find out he didn't do it, but I feel like if he did, he would never own up to it. He would never own it. So I like the fact that she was like, look, you don't understand what's happening. Let me explain it to you, child. You know, so that was really cool.
That's one of the things that I love about this show is that, I mean, you know, in most cases you'd have like, okay, the villains are all, you know, terrible and bad, and the heroes are always good and they're right and their cause is just and all of that. And in this, you get a situation where the characters are much more real. They're fleshed out. There are characters who will do bad things for good reasons and good things for bad reasons. And the whole way that when you find out that the vice president is involved in this, you think, oh, she's terrible. But then she comes in and she does that whole thing with the map. And it's like, yes.
Oh, okay.
I totally understand. That makes absolute sense to me. I do the same thing. Why? That is perfectly reasonable.
I know. And then you do realize that the whole thing was an accident. Like what they were trying to do, a miniature false flag, and it became a
bigger
thing.
We know that already. We know that it was an accident earlier on. I think Allison's point, just in terms of what I think is great, just is
what
that
the
hero
impetus was for doing it in the first place.
Right.
Yes. And that our hero doesn't in fact know it all. And because she doesn't know it all, she's making judgments that are, you know, inaccurate.
Which is really why they told her that she couldn't know all the information. And they were like, well, tell your husband, but we're not going to tell you. And I was like, what is this? But then once you find out why, and we're like, oh, okay. I see why you did that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy, but it was good. All right. So let's wrap this up. I think we're saying thumbs up.
Way up.
Elbows, toes.
Way up.
All the fingers.
And I cannot wait for season 3, because that means more Allison Janney. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, she's so great in this.
Yeah. So next up, we're going to talk Silo. And this is the first 2 episodes of season 2. And I will say the first episode feels like a very slow roll to where we're going. I was like, why is this so slow? Like, please tell me we're not going to take the entire episode to get to where, and we took the whole episode to get there. So it was slower than I would like. And I think I could tell about halfway through the episode that she wasn't going to, the beginning of it I liked, because she was like discovering things, she's doing all this stuff on her own. Like, I really liked that part. But then when you find out that the objective is to get across this bridge, and we spend way too much time of her trying to get across this bridge, I started getting a little disappointed. But other thoughts?
I liked it as a standalone. I don't think it's going to tie deeply into the rest of the season. But I was really interested, you know, in the first season of Silo, that silo of 10,000 people is our entire universe. It's our understanding of the entire universe. So to get that, oh, there are other silos out there. Mm-hmm. And here's kind of what happened in one of those other silos. I was interested enough for that first episode to remain interesting to me. And to me, it was all worth it at the end where the guy's peeping out the peephole. He's like, yeah, I can understand how you want to see what's on the other side of the door. That makes sense. But, you know, if you do it again, I'm going to have to kill you. I thought it was one of the most pleasant death threats I've ever heard. So I was okay with it.
That I will have to agree with you on that, because I did not expect him, like when he was giving that statement, he's like, oh, I see you see a door and it makes sense that you'd want to get through the door. Like the way he was talking, I really didn't expect at the end of it, he was like, and then I'm going to have to kill you. Like, what? It was great.
Well, Tom, I think,
sorry, Allison, go ahead.
I think they make explicit, because the very beginning of the episode, the cold open, shows what happened at to have this silo end up the way it did. You know, you see their revolution, and you very pointedly see the leader, what appears to be the leader of the revolution, send his son away with one of his guys and say, protect him, you know, bring him somewhere else. So I think it seems pretty obvious to me that the guy who's in that room is the son.
I thought it was the son as well.
And the fact that he's an elderly man now shows you how long he's been in there. Even if the other guy got in with him at some point, I'm certainly he died a long time ago. So this guy's been going slowly crazy inside that
he's
room.
He's definitely insane. Yeah.
And you've got to figure, you know, he's not going to have necessarily rational reactions to things. So yeah, that's he's also being played by Steve Zahn, who I'm really looking forward to seeing more of in this show. But I they didn't hire him just to say three words and close the door, and that's the last time you ever see him. But I loved that little meeting between the two of them, and I think that the episode when she actually finally gets out over the ridge and sees the signs of other silos and what happened to this one and the things that she needs to go through to get to that door, including all the time that she spends. Yeah, I think all of that is going to pay off later on, because she finds important things out. I mean, when she takes a dive off the side and we think, oh, she's dead, instead she falls into the water.
Yeah.
Well, she doesn't know, but she manages somehow to get to the stairs. But so that I'm sure is going to play in later to what's important, knowing that this silo is flooded. So we're getting parceled out little pieces here and there without dialogue, mostly, that I think will be seeded through and be important later. So I really like the way they did this episode. I really did.
I didn't mind episode. I didn't mind 201, and I'm a Rebecca Ferguson fan. Plus,
I like her too. Yeah.
Plus, Graham Yost wrote the episode, so and since he's responsible for getting us Slow Horses on Apple TV Plus, among other things, I'm totally in. But I thought I want to move on to episode two. I thought it was really interesting that we spend the whole first episode with her. And we spend the whole 202 within the silo when she came. And the fact that she's out there exploring worries evil Tim Robbins, the mayor.
Well, what's so great is when he opens that book and it's like, if they don't clean, be prepared for a riot, for war. And
war.
I was like, whoa, like, that seemed like an extreme.
Zero to 70 in there.
Yeah. And they're like, no one ever made it over the ridge.
Like about episode two, which I found lacking in the whole first season, was the judge. The judge's character returns, and you have a better understanding of who she is and what motivates her. I was excited to see her interactions with
and
with
their
Bernard.
Power dynamic.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like who's got the upper hand? Well, it depends on what moment you're in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, technically, he's actually the one who has the full kind of formal authority.
Yeah,
but,
he has the power of the ball.
But he needs her, which is nice. And also that they reveal that she was his shadow before she became the judge. I think all of those just kind of pieces of the backstory that get revealed in that episode are really interesting to me. Libya, I will have to say, you know, we talked about this before because I hadn't watched Silo until just recently. I don't mind Common in this show. He doesn't bother me as he is in other shows. I think his style fits really well with his character in this show. So I don't even have a negative thing to say about Common. I kind of like what he's doing in this show, which surprises me, but
I know, I knew it would, but I was like, you don't have to worry. The show is so good. Common's not going to screw it up. Like, and I do like the fact that because the judge was what's his name? Bernard's shadow. And you understand how he's so unsatisfied with Common being his shadow now. Like, he's
because
like,
he had her.
Because he had her, and you're like, oh, okay, I get it, you know? And so that really solidifies all the pieces it's not just like a power play between the two of them. I feel like he genuinely like needs her.
Yes.
And so that adds a different layer to it. Like, he values her opinion, basically, is I guess what I'm saying.
Well, so it's equal.
Yeah, well, I mean, to put another point on that, he's still reading the instruction manual, right?
No, but I think he knows. I think he memorized it. I think he knows.
But what I'm saying is, he is not all knowing, and he knows this. So true. What he values in her is another intelligent person who's also ruthless to run ideas back and forth, because he doesn't know what to do, really. And right. I think that's kind of valuable. As powerful as he seems and how many things he affects, he's still going back to the instruction book because he doesn't actually know what to do.
Right.
I think that there's also another factor playing in here, which was important when he said, when he was trying to encourage her to be there when he gave his big speech, is that she has a certain authority and trust from the people that he does not have. Right. The people acknowledge he's the leader, but they don't particularly like that, and they don't particularly believe him when he talks. So if she's standing there behind him, that is like having the medal of quality. She is saying by my standing here, that's proof that you can trust what he's saying, because I am backing up what he's saying. That's why he wanted her there.
She thought he was going to crash and burn. That's
yes,
why
she
showed
she
up.
She did it for her own reasons. But that was his reason, because she does. She has the trust and authority of the people in a way that he does not have.
Right.
And I have to say, though, like her, I was surprised how good his speech was. It was absolute bullshit, but it was brilliant bullshit. It was the kind of thing that, you could get the people to believe. And it turned people on, back to his side. So it was very well done. It was very
I'm just going to throw this out here. I find it fascinating how many of these sci-fi fantasy shows, for whatever reason, are starting to echo real-world situations. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap this up. I think we're saying thumbs up for Silo. And podcast, just so everybody knows, we're doing our end of the year podcast. So if you guys as listeners have thoughts on what your best, worst shows of the year, let us know. And we will let you know what we think. So that way you can pick your shows to watch in the new year or for the break or whatever. All right. If you guys have any questions or comments, you can leave them at tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter or on Facebook. You listen to us on 6 Degrees of Geek, Sci-Fi Radio, and YouTube. And we'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.